A job and health care, two things almost anyone thinks every Iowan should have a chance to get. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Agreeing on how best to create jobs and provide health care continues to be the subject of heated debate here in Iowa. For the first part of the show, we'll talk with Governor Branstad's health care policy advisor to better understand the Healthy Iowa plan that the governor's offered as an alternative to Medicaid expansion. And in the second half, we'll talk with an economist about job creation in Iowa and hear from a Republican and Democratic lawmaker on bills that could create more jobs. Join our conversation after this news. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. As the Affordable Care Act, sometimes called Obamacare, is now the law of the land, states are trying to figure out how it fits them. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional for states to accept an expansion of Medicaid. That's the joint federal-state program that provides health care to low-income people. Well, Governor Branstad is against the Medicaid expansion. It was just a couple weeks ago the governor unveiled his Healthy Iowa plan, an alternative to the expansion of Medicaid. In that press conference, he said his plan does four things: improves access to health care, reimburses and rewards positive health outcomes, encourages Iowans to take ownership of their own health care decisions, and it's sustainable for the long term. And he goes on, here's what the governor had to say at that press conference.
More Iowans will be served by private insurance, by the private insurance market, with access to affordable plans available through health benefit exchanges. As you know, that's part of Obamacare. Private insurance is a positive step for the patient with greater access to care, the provider through greater reimbursement, and the taxpayer with less reliance on the entitlement system.
Now, Senate Democrats are proposing a bill to expand Medicaid. They're not in favor of the governor's Healthy Iowa plan. I spoke with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl, a Democrat from Council Bluffs, about the plan, and here's what he had to say.
There are elements in his plan that have been in other states' plans that have been rejected. So the Virginia plan was rejected. It looks like his plan is modeled after Indiana's plan. The credible evidence suggests that the Indiana plan will also be rejected later this year. So we definitely have concerns about the governor's plan, but we have very, very few details.
Well, then late last week, Senate Democrats addressed what they say was the governor's biggest issue with the Medicaid expansion, and that's the federal government's ability to pay for Medicaid for the long haul. Here's Senate President Pam Yoakum, a Democrat from Dubuque.
The language we suggested would protect Iowa's taxpayers from any risk, and it would address the governor's concerns. In short, if the federal government's sky falls, we'll be off the hook as a state.
A spokesman for Governor Branstad said after that announcement from Senate Democrats that they're pleased Democrats are looking for alternatives and not just opting into an expansion of Medicaid, but the governor's keeping the stance that the state cannot rely on the federal government to cover all the costs they've committed to. Now, here in the Statehouse Law Library, I'm joined by Michael Buslow, the governor's health care policy advisor. He's here to shed a little light on what exactly the Healthy Iowa plan does. Michael, thanks for coming back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Clay.
So now, the last time you were here, the governor was proposing expanding Iowa care, and that's not the case now. Many critics are saying that this plan is too vague. Let's shed a little light. Help us better explain. Can you kind of set up what the Healthy Iowa plan would do?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, the Healthy Iowa plan would cover every Iowan, 19 to 64, individuals, childless adults that are below the poverty level in Iowa. It's about 89,000 lives that would be covered on the Healthy Iowa plan. And it's actually, I think, a critical point of agreement. And that is both the Senate Democrats and Governor Branstad have committed to care for the neediest working Iowans. Above that poverty level, what Governor Branstad would propose is utilizing the health benefit exchanges, the affordable exchanges that are created under law that in fact, the Iowa Senate has proposed Iowa creating our own exchange. Governor Branstad has said, no, we will instead, I think it's more prudent long-term choice to partner with the federal government. These exchanges limit how much someone can spend on their premiums and also limit things like out-of-pocket costs for Iowans. So above the federal poverty level, Iowans will be purchasing on the exchange. And under the Affordable Care Act, every Iowan now has to purchase insurance or pay a tax. And these folks, what the governor believes, and I think you heard it in the earlier clip, is that private insurance is a better choice for the person because it has better access to care. It's better for the healthcare provider with better reimbursement. And finally, it's better for the taxpayer because there's less reliance on our state entitlement system.
There are concerns that that's a 89,000 is quite a smaller number than the 150,000. I've even heard estimates up to 180,000 that an expansion of Medicaid would bring on to the rolls. How do you look at that disparity and the amount of people that brings on?
Well, some of that exists because of what they call the Woodwork effect. So the Woodwork effect is this idea that there are people in Iowa right now that are eligible for Medicaid, but for whatever reason have not signed up. Maybe they are they're working Iowans who have a job who that company has decided to provide some private insurance for them. And although they could be eligible for Medicaid, they have private insurance and kind of seem to be working through. So that 150 is a little bit higher because of what they call the Woodwork effect, and people who already would be eligible for Medicaid who are just not signed up. They're saying there's going to be some of those folks who come out of the woodwork and sign up beginning January 1 of next year. The 89,000 is below the federal poverty level, and that's all 19 to 64-year-olds who are 100% of the federal poverty level below. And you know that makes up some of the expansion number, but for us, it's that last 38% or so that would add to it.
River to River listeners, are you a friend or a loved one on Medicaid or IowaCare? Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Reach out to us on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio or tweet us at IPR Talk. So I guess one way to kind of do this is to let's say that you have diabetes. Can you talk a little bit about how somebody on an expansion of Medicaid, how those services would be different there versus the healthy Iowa?
Absolutely. You know, like I said earlier, there are a number of areas of agreement, and both the Healthy Iowa Plan and what we've looked at for doing in Medicaid, the governor is proposing also for Medicaid is using accountable care organizations or other integrated sort of care settings. The key is under the Healthy Iowa Plan, we would have inpatient and outpatient, local access to doctors through these accountable care organizations that are being built in our state. We would have durable medical equipment, prescription drugs. It would be a modern health plan, but the payment wouldn't be in fee-for-service where it's kind of we pay that doctor for just what they do. We're paying for the whole treatment, improving quality of care through reimbursing based on quality and based on outcomes. Under Medicaid, it would simply put people into a 1960s model of medicine where the doctor gets paid for running tests or doing more procedures, and there's no reward, absolutely no reward in the current Medicaid program for improving quality or improving outcomes. And we want to have a modern health plan that has those quality incentives.
I've talked to some recipients of Medicaid and IowaCare that live in a very rural population, very, very far away. One person had to go all the way to Iowa City for care that lives up in northwest Iowa. How would this address the transportation aspect, the Healthy Iowa Plan?
Well, first of all, the governor's committed to local access. You know, we have some inherent access issues in the state of Iowa. We're 47th in the nation in internal medicine doctors. We're last in the nation in OBGYN, last in the nation in emergency medicine doctors per 100,000 residents. It's why the governor has proposed in his condition of the state $2 million to help fund residency programs in the state, $2 million to help with rural physician loan repayment. In addition to that, the governor's committed to local access to the doctors that we do have via these accountable care organizations that are being built under the Healthy Iowa Plan. You know, under IowaCare, we realize that it is unworkable and unsustainable as a health plan to have to shuttle people all the way across the street, or actually not even shuttle them, make them drive from somewhere in far northwest Iowa all the way to Iowa City. This plan would ensure local access to the primary care providers and doctors that these folks need, working Iowans need to see, but it would also have emergency transportation. So when they have to go to those expanded care settings for maybe more in-depth treatment, that exists and is available.
So, but with local access, if I have a weekly appointment that I need to make and the best care that I can get is in Iowa City, but I live up in Estherville, so you're saying that there would be those weekly visits could be done much closer in that rural population? And
The hope would be, and what the plan will look like, is to serve these working Iowans and the healthy Iowa population, you'll have to be able to provide certain access to local care. That'll be, you know, part of the requirements for taking on a region of the population. And for us, what we're saying is that should help ensure local access for Iowans that would be on the Healthy Iowa plan. You know, you look at the 89,000 Iowans that will be served by this, a vast majority of them do live in the urban areas within Iowa. But we know that there's Iowans who will count on the Healthy Iowa plan for their access to care that are not in an urban center. And we want to make sure that they could get the best access possible. Now, that's not necessarily – that means that's not going to help us overcome some of our inherent access problems, but we're going to do our best.
We want to reach out to Cheryl, who's on the line from Iowa City. Cheryl, are you there?
Yes. My husband is considered 90% disabled by the VA for service-related injuries. And how is the Affordable Care going to affect him? Because he currently has no extra medical insurance or prescription insurance because it is all covered under the VA.
Well, I think – I guess I'm not totally sure about where his access is. Is he – if he's considered disabled, does he receive his health care coverage at all through Medicaid as being
not
under disability
through, no,
right now?
No, not through Medicaid. He's not disabled for Social Security purposes. He is disabled as far as veterans' disability.
And I don't – Cheryl, I'm not totally positive on this, but I don't think that because he gets it through Veterans Disability, so he's getting his health care plan through a VA plan, and that's federally facilitated, not state facilitated. And I don't know what the impacts will be, so I guess I'd hate to speculate. But to me, I'm not aware that VA plans are impacted by the Affordable Care Act.
Okay,
so there would be
where do we go to find that answer out? Because I cannot find an answer to that question anyplace as to what his needs are going to be as far as both the federal government and the state government with being taxed if he does not have a private insurance.
You know, sure, I'd be glad to help you with it, and I might not be able to get the answer, but I'll make sure I forward it to someone who can. We will get you an answer. Clay, or we can – if you somehow give us a contact information, we can get you my email, and I'll be glad to help you.
So this is. Thanks, Cheryl, for your comment. So this is something that it's not something that would be addressed under Medicaid. That's something different as far as what you're provided by the VA.
So, you know, for Medicaid under the Healthy Iowa plan, Medicaid still will serve the, you know, aged, blind, disabled, pregnant populations. That is still going to continue to exist. And the governor would like to see certain parts of that Healthy Iowa plan implemented for the general Medicaid population, things that are like paying for quality outcomes, paying for the improvement of patient health, and some of the personal responsibility measures where there's incentives to get preventative services taken care of.
So as other Republican governors like Chris Christie of New Jersey or Rick Scott of Florida have gone with expanding Medicaid, why would things be different here in Iowa?
Well, you know, it's often said that, you know, there's this Medicaid program, but in reality, there's 50 different Medicaid programs. State by state, the calculation is completely different. In some states, they've expanded population only very little over time, and they have great private access to healthcare, or they don't have very much private access to healthcare. In Iowa, we have over 90% of our population with access to private health insurance. We've expanded Medicaid since 2000 by 65% population-wise, now covering more than 400,000 covered adults adults from $250,000 in 2000. That cost has gone up by 129% over that same time. Iowa's in a little bit of a different situation because we have had that expansion and we've seen how costly it is. Other states have made different policy decisions because eligibility and benefits are decided at the state level.
So the development from last week, what the Democrats have come forward with to opt out if the federal government says that they can't no longer foot the bill, that would seem like an olive branch. And some have said that the governor could take that, and they, you know, if something did go wrong, that they could pull out. Why is he still hesitant to move forward with it?
Well, I can say that we've been talking with the Senate Democrats, and we appreciate that they are acknowledging the downside risk of partnering with a federal government that is $16 trillion in debt, running an annual deficit of $1 trillion, and that hasn't passed a budget in 4 years. We absolutely appreciate that risk. That's a long-term risk. And you know, they had mentioned in the press conference that, you know, we in the state could be off the hook. The problem is the governor doesn't want to make a promise to Iowans and then take the state off the hook when these Iowans would still be on the hook relying on those services. We want to make promises we can keep.
And he recently talked with the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius. It's been a few weeks now, but did it make it more clear? At that point, he was talking about expanding Iowa care, and now we have the Healthy Iowa Plan. Did it make it more clear that he's going to be able to, or the state will be able to get the waiver and move forward with this, or are there certain things that need to be done before you move forward with that?
We're going to be pursuing a waiver, but absolutely the legislature will need to approve it. And I think it would be a shame if a waiver comes out of Iowa that has bipartisan support, which it would have to pass the Iowa Senate and the House Republicans and have the governor's signature, to have bipartisan support that would offer care for every Iowan and do it within the construct of the Affordable Care Act and have it simply turned down due to politics in D.C. when in Des Moines we compromised and we provided care.
We want to go down to Jim from Spencer. He has a concern about how insurance companies will benefit from the governor's proposal. Jim, what's your comment?
Well, my comment is that, you know, the biggest strain on our health delivery system is that we have these corporations that are delivering profits to their shareholders and constantly offering up denial of service. And it seems to me that we're just propping them up. I don't understand why, if we're going to have a better healthcare system, that we even need them at all. They don't deliver any service. They just deny it.
Well, what would you have to say, Michael, about this concern about private health insurance denying claims?
Well, you know, I guess I would say that these insurance companies have a role to play. That idea has bipartisan support. The Affordable Care Act has said that these insurance companies should operate within the exchange and help provide insurance coverage for thousands and millions of people across our nation, and the governor would like to see that these recognizing that the insurance companies have a role to play can help provide affordable coverage to people under the Affordable Care Act exchanges and do so in a way that's fair to the people on the exchanges and fair to taxpayers.
So how do you convince Senate Democrats, which seem to really have their heels dug in about expanding Medicaid in the state, how do you convince them that this is the right plan to go forward?
Well, Des Moines isn't D.C. I come more and more to realize that we don't manage crisis to crisis. We can disagree without being disagreeable. We've been meeting with Senate Democrats. We've met with them over the past few weeks. And like I said, we agree on a lot of things already. We agree on care for all these Iowans. The governor's proposed the Healthy Iowa Plan, which covers 0 to 100% of the poverty level, and then uses the affordable insurance exchanges to help provide coverage above that. The Senate Democrats are proposing expansion of Medicaid to 138%. But we have some agreements of what that care should look like, what those services should look like, and making sure Iowans are taken care of. We've also committed to trying to get something done this session for these Iowans. It would be just shameful if we don't get something done where these folks are going to be provided care.
We're talking with Michael Buslow here on River to River. He's the governor's health care policy advisor. Are you or someone you know on Medicaid or Iowa Care? Do you have questions, comments? Give us a call in the remaining minutes of this first half of River to River, 866-780-9100, on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio, or tweet us at IPR Talk. You know, there was a kind of a comment at the end of the press conference last week where Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall was talking about the governor making a trip to Arizona this week. He brought up Arizona has legislation that would allow an opt-out if the federal government can't live up to the promise of footing the bill. He joked that maybe he could spend some time reviewing the legislation there. Is that a similar case, or is this another one of those cases where it's hard to compare?
I think it's really hard to compare. You know, Arizona didn't join Medicaid until the 1980s. They were the last state in the nation. They also are it's a Republican-controlled state, so it's a Republican governor, but a Republican legislature, both houses, that are very reticent to expand Medicaid and take on additional cost. You know, Iowa is only one of three states in the nation with a split legislature. We have Senate Democrat controlled. The Senate is Democrat controlled. The House is Republican controlled. We're committed to working within that construct and working to find solutions for Iowans.
We're going to go now to Robert from Marion. Robert, I understand you recently had a kidney transplant and you have some questions.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I had a kidney transplant in 2011, and now I'm in a place where I'm getting my medical bills paid in part by my private insurance and in part from Medicare rather than Medicaid. And the experience I'm having is that the insurance companies are giving all kinds of crazy rules that prevent me from enjoying my joint benefits. And as a result, they're basically not paying bills and making the federal government pay all of it. So if the idea of a private public insurance covering me seems to be to maximize the profit of the insurance companies and to dump all the costs on the federal government, and I want to know why insurance companies are allowed to renege on their obligations.
Okay, Robert,
thank you. It's a miserable idea for... I mean, I'm stuck in the middle of this. I'm taking time off work today to try and call and get this resolved. It's just a miserable experience.
Okay, Robert, thank you for your comments. Michael, how would you respond to Robert?
Well, Robert, I guess I don't totally understand the relationship. Medicare is a completely federally facilitated health care program. In fact, the state of Iowa, we really don't do much with it other than Medicare, Medicaid dually eligible residents. So I don't know that interaction that would exist between the insurance companies and Medicare.
All right. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. We're wrapping up the first half of this conversation. Thanks to Michael Buslow, Healthcare Policy Advisor to Governor Branstad, for being here today. Thank you, Michael. And also, we don't want the conversation to stop here. If you have firsthand experience on Medicaid or Iowa Care, we want to hear from you. We'll throw a link on our Facebook page and at iowapublicradio.org that lets you sign up for the Iowa Public Radio Public Insight Network. It's a tool that lets you share your stories on certain topics Iowa Public Radio News is working on. We've already heard from people around the state about the Medicaid expansion. Some agree with the governor, some with Senate Democrats, and many are still on the fence. Again, head on over to our Facebook page or iowapublicradio.org and keep the conversation going. In the second part of the show today, we'll talk job creation. We'll check in with Dave Swenson, an economist at Iowa State, who just released a report that looks at economic impact of population trends in Iowa. Then we'll talk with Senator Bill Dotzler, a Democrat from Waterloo, and Representative Marianne Hanusa, a Republican from Council Bluffs, to talk about bills at the State House they hope can foster job creation. I'm Clay Masters. That's coming up on River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. Thank you. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Job creation continues to be one of the ongoing conversations here at the Iowa State House. Just today, Iowa Workforce Development made seasonal adjustments to the state's unemployment rate for December and January. The rate for December was originally reported to be 4.9%, but ticked up to 5% when seasonally adjusted. It remained at 5% for January. In a moment, we'll talk with a Republican and Democratic lawmaker about bills that aim to create jobs here in Iowa. But first, joining me on the phone is Iowa State economist Dave Swenson. Dave, thanks for being on River to River today.
You're welcome.
So you released a report Wednesday looking at the economic impact of population trends. Tell us what you found.
Well, what we've got going on in the state of Iowa are several related factors. Last decade, our population statewide didn't grow as rapidly as the nation. It grew by less than half the rate. Well, you know, we expected that. Other places are growing more rapidly. But our rural areas were contracting. And that, of course, we don't like, and we're struggling with trying to maintain our rural vitality. Now, within that contraction, though, one of the factors that is very disturbing is that the rural population contraction is significantly composed of working-age adults, in particular, young working-age adults, young people 25 to 44. That's the key to any economic vitality. And their rates of out-migration were more than double the rate that the state endured. We lost those people from the state. We're losing them at an even greater rate from our rural areas. It's not just the young people. It's those young adults up to about age 30 or 44. So we have that factor going on. Now we have something else going on. The baby boomers, they hit retirement age, the official retirement age, 65, in 2011. And the baby boomers are going to start exiting the workforce at an accelerating rate. I'm 58 years old. I'm about the median baby boomer. So it's going to continue to increase until about 2020. At the same time, the number nationally, the number of people who are ages 16 to 24, the people that would begin to replace those baby boomers, at the same time when the boomers population is increasing rapidly in terms of them becoming now 65 and older, this replacement population is actually going down. So what we're anticipating at the national level is stagnant growth in the national labor force, or the potential labor force. Well, I took and then said, okay, what's that mean for Iowa? And what I did was a very straightforward projection. I used survivability rates and migration rates that are age-specific for our population, and I looked at the characteristics of our population between 2000 and 2010, and I said, if we have the same migration pattern and the same rate of survivability, the same death rates, and I work it through to 2020, what is our state going to look like? Is it going to have a healthy labor force? And what I found out was that if you accept all of those factors, the number of people in Iowa, not the number of workers, but the number of people in Iowa ages 16 to 64 could potentially decrease by 74,000. So the ability of our state's economy to grow could very well be constrained by an inability of the state to actually produce workers.
So Dave, what are the potential reasons for this decline?
Well, the first thing is historically we've out-migrated our young adults. That our economy can't use them. Other economies outbid us for them, and so that's an underlying factor. The other part of it is, though, it's the extremely rapid exit from the labor force that's going to occur among our baby boom population, and their exit, and then the absence of a replacement population in our economy, in the Iowa economy, to replace those baby boomers. Those are the two primary factors right now.
So in a minute, we'll be speaking with lawmakers on their workforce mm-hmm. development proposals. In your opinion, what would be the most effective in bringing and keeping young Iowans to the state to work?
the state of Iowa has to continue to do what it can to diversify employment opportunities in the state. The more broadly defined and broadly diverse the industrial activity in the state, industrial opportunities, occupational opportunities, the greater the probability that we'll be able to retain more and more of our workers, as well as be regionally competitive for workers from other states.
Dave Swenson, Iowa State economist, thanks for bringing us up to speed on your research from last week.
You're welcome.
And now moving on, as you're listening, job creation is always a talking point here at the Capitol and here in the Law Library at the Iowa State House. I'm here with Senator Bill Dantzler, a Democrat from Waterloo. And Senator, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
And Representative Marianne Hanusa, a Republican from Council Bluffs. Representative, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me here today.
And River to River listeners, are you unemployed or have you left the state, come back, know someone who is unemployed? Did you find it hard to get back to work after losing your job? We want to hear about your struggles. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or run over to Facebook and leave us a comment. So first of all, we'll start with you, Senator Dantzler. Talk about some of the things that Senate Democrats have been proposing this session.
Well, first of all, I think Professor Swenson's report's pretty sobering. And it's pretty clear that we got to get our game ramped up here in Iowa to not only provide for the skills gap that we're seeing out there. We got to make sure that we connect young Iowans to opportunities here in Iowa and also recruit people back to Iowa, those Iowans that left. I hear you left, Clay, and you came from a different state, and we got to bring people back to Iowa. So that's an important thing. In the Iowa Senate, we recognize that there's a real shortfall in what employers are telling us, what they need versus what's out there. At 5% unemployment, when you're talking, you've got, 82,000 unemployed Iowans, you'd think there'd be plenty of people to fill the jobs that are open across Iowa. But the truth of the matter is that we have a real skills gap. That is that those workers who are looking for jobs don't necessarily have the skill sets that they need to have in order to fill those positions. And it's slowly getting worse. In fact, some of the recent studies are showing that in 5 years, 62% of all jobs here in Iowa are going to require more than a high school education. So we looked at a bill called Senate File 291 to put an additional $25 million in resources in various programs. And basically what it is help people connect with community colleges and get them to schools, allow students to have a better access to job opportunities, internships, some of the tuition gap stuff. So it's a variety of different programs, and we're going to be passing that real soon out of the Senate, sending it to our friends in the House of Representatives.
And that's a good segue. Representative Marianne Hanusa from Council Bluffs, tell us a little bit about what House Republicans are proposing this session as far as job creation.
Well, we certainly want to. We haven't seen the Senate bill that Senator Dantzler refers to, but certainly economic development is a priority, and we want to continue to fund those economic development programs that are currently out there. Certainly, the senator is correct when he talks about the skilled middle-skill workforce shortage, and that is really a problem for our state because we have businesses who are flourishing, who have job opportunities available, and they're having to reach outside our borders to pull people in, and so. We are continuing to work with workforce development, with the Skilled Iowa program, which is trying to improve job training and marketability for Iowans who want jobs. Working with the ACE program, which is trying to work with community colleges to really define courses and training that will fit specific needs that businesses have, and bringing the businesses in as a partnership with the community colleges. So. And just overall, I mean, there's creating jobs in Iowa is a multifaceted work, which of course includes improving our education system, not only K through 12, but also, you know, working with the training on community colleges, and also creating a business friendly environment so that businesses will want to move to the state and employ our citizens and grow and expand those businesses that are already here.
So, Senator Dotzler, some of the funding for this Senate bill, you said it was $291, is that correct?
Yeah, yes.
Where would that money come from?
Well, that's actual general fund money, and we have that in our budget. The governor laid out his budget. We looked at the governor's budget, and we also are looking at our 99% spending limitation. And within those limits, we found $25 million. And I think one of the things that's within that bill that's unique, Iowa was one of only three states in the nation that didn't have funding support for adult basic education. And that's people trying to go back and get their GEDs. In my community of Waterloo, we have a large Burmese population that were refugees that have just come to Waterloo, Cedar Falls area, and there's more coming. They're really looking to learn English. And it's at those urban centers that they train those individuals on their secondary skills so they can communicate and work in our communities. So we're putting $7.5 million in there. I know that the United Way of Central Iowa has really worked on a work group to try to identify these skill set shortages and try to upgrade, you know, these workers' skills so that they're going to match what's needed out there. And, the professor talked about diversifying, and I think that that's a real key. We've got to make sure that we've got diverse job opportunities from advanced manufacturing all the way to some of the new technology sector stuff. But, you know, I want to get back to one more point about this. Even if we're 100% successful at upgrading Iowan's skills, the job openings that we have currently here in Iowa will not still be filled because of a lot of the high technological level of what they are. And we got to do a better job of recruiting back to Iowa. And the way to do that also is talking with some of the top CEOs of these innovator startup companies around Iowa. They're paying top wages and benefits. And they're saying, why would somebody want to come to Iowa when they got kind of a negative opinion about what we have to offer? No mountains, you know, no majestic oceans. You hear it all the time. But we've got a lot to offer here in Iowa, and we got to really talk about it and improve the arts and culture and recreational part of our communities and make sure our communities have a place of sense where people can locate towards it and feel that Iowa's really a cool place. And when you talk to people who come back, they love our state and they love our people, and we got to really do a better job of marketing that and reaching out along with these programs to upgrade Iowan skills.
So if the growth is happening primarily in these more urban centers, is the answer to put all that focus and attention in the more urban centers in the state?
Well, I'd answer that. I would think our rural people would say, no, heck no, you know. But that's, you know, we have a community tourism attraction program for a while, and it was at $12.5 million, and recently it's been cut down to $5 million, and we worked with our friends in the House. We need to ramp that up so even some of the smaller rural communities, have interesting things, and they do. I ride Ragbri every summer. This summer will be my 30th year traveling across Iowa, and I want to tell you, Iowa's full of neat little towns that got a lot to offer, and we need to give them some additional tools and resources to help build some of the recreational things. So Charles City just put a little whitewater course up there, and they're talk of north central Iowa. So those are the kind of things we need to continue to do.
Representative Hanusa, the ways to foster job creation in rural parts. I mean, Council Bluffs is more of one of those urban centers, but any ideas for going out beyond the urban centers?
Well, I'm glad to hear that Senator Dotzer is going to be doing RAGBRAI this summer. That means you'll be in Council Bluffs because that's where RAGBRAI is starting. So spend some money while you're there and help our economy.
We always do.
But no, I mean, certainly we have a diverse state and you know, many urban areas, but we have a lot of rural areas too, and those areas need to be paid attention to as well. There has been some flight, you know, in the rural areas into more of the urban centers. But we need to make sure that we are looking at opportunities not only with businesses but also with training opportunities. Education, online education is one thing that benefits rural communities a lot, and we need to make sure that our friends in the rural areas of this state are you know, receiving or having opportunities for job growth as well.
River to River listeners, are you unemployed? Have you been unemployed? Have you ever struggled to find work while living here in Iowa? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or go to Facebook and leave us a comment over at Iowa Public Radio. Now, I'm hearing some common thoughts here between a Democrat and a Republican.
That's amazing, isn't it?
So are there things that we can kind of focus on of ideas? I mean, we're not going to write legislation here while we're on the air, but are there ideas for getting more people back to work? As far as community colleges seems to be a common thread, are there ways to talk about investments in that kind of education? Senator Dotzer,
I think that, you know, when you start talking about education and community colleges, it's one of the areas that you see tremendous bipartisan support here at the Capitol. And despite what you might say in the newspapers and media sources, that we don't always fight all the time. So we do try to get along. And I really think that Iowa's community colleges are really the key on taking care of that first step of moving people from not having the skill sets to having them. And it's very cost effective also. And you don't necessarily have to even get a two-year degree. There's a lot of certificate accredited programs that, for example, there's a tremendous shortage of welders across the state of Iowa. And individuals who would like to do that kind of stuff, it doesn't take that much in a community college setting to get the kind of skill sets. Truckers are always in need. There's also different types of CNC training courses. So there's plenty of things that we can offer a short term where an individual doesn't have to go to community college for 2 years to really advance them.
And have you heard from your constituents maybe that are having trouble finding work or that want to come back? Representative Hanusa, have you spoke with people that are looking for work in Iowa?
I have actually, and the community colleges are, as Senator Dotzer said, are an issue that there is absolutely no disagreement on. I think all of the legislators in the Senate and the House agree that community colleges are a critical piece of our job creation package, and they are perfectly suited to be able to address a specific need that a business may have for specific training or job needs. And my constituents, I'm on a border community, or I'm in a border community, and so we have some challenges being across the river from Omaha, Nebraska, where there's a different tax structure, there are different opportunities, and so it is. We have some different challenges in Council Bluffs in terms of attracting and keeping our workers there. But our community college there is critical in really providing that good, solid education, but also providing the different kinds of training and hands-on vocational training that is needed to find employment.
We're going to go now to the line to Kari from Northwest Iowa. Kari, what are your comments or thoughts? What are we not talking about here?
Well, I just wanted to share the perspective of the Governor's STEM Initiative. I'm the regional manager for that initiative, and I'm on my way actually to speak to 20 business people about how they can make an impact in recruiting people into the STEM areas, and that's the exact mid-level skills gap that I think we're jointly targeting. So I wanted to ask the representative and the senator, how do you feel about supporting the STEM initiative, and are you pleased with the work that's happening in that sector?
Yes, I'm 100% behind STEM, and that's science, technology, engineering, and math, for those that might not be familiar with the acronym. That's based out of the University of Northern Iowa in cooperation with other universities and schools, and we actually, in our Senate file 291, we continue with the resources for the STEM initiative, and it's something that Iowa businesses have been clamoring for, that it's important to really connect young people while they're in high school and junior high with career opportunities, so you know, real world experiences, so they get excited about this and see that there's an opportunity for them, and so that they realize that it's important to take these science and math courses and really see real value in them. And one neat thing about STEM is it's a way of teaching that's relevant. And students get really excited about it, and it's a great program.
Representative Hanusa?
Well, I absolutely agree, and am a big supporter of the STEM program and the initiatives that are out there. And it's critically important to introduce our students to these subject areas, work with them, get them excited about areas that they may not have considered studying, but also because as we look at the jobs of the future, I mean, this is where a lot of those jobs are. They're in the science and the technology and the engineering areas. And so it's very critical that for us as a state to be putting resources behind this and really emphasizing that STEM package as kind of the wave of the future is where jobs will be for our young Iowans.
So I'm hearing a lot of commonalities here. What is the ground that we work forward to get something passed through if there was something to come through this legislative session that would create more jobs here in Iowa? Where's the common ground?
Well, I hope the common ground is what we're passing over to the House, which is increase in funding in these areas, career pathways, the 260 C18A, which is community college equipment and training programs geared towards manufacturing and other businesses, you know, and the workforce skills gap issues are very important. We've got enough money in our budget, so I'm hoping the House will jump on board, maybe add some more great ideas.
Representative Hanusa, we have to finish up here really quickly, but could you address the question?
I think consensus on the fact that we really need to focus on the skilled workforce shortage. The House and Senate right now are at different numbers, but certainly the House wants to increase funding for economic growth.
Okay, thanks to both of
you
for joining us.
You've got to give us more time next time. Man, I'm just getting ready to go here.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.